Are you hearing me all right? Okay, I think so. All right. So welcome everyone. This is going to be a titleless talk about serverless JavaScript. This is probably going to be the nicest part, the title only. I'm joking. Hope you can get some more of this, of course. So a bit more about me. I'm João Tunes. I'm a software engineer at Wild E. We're basically a software consultancy company focused on Node, but mainly we focus on good software practices and try to implement that wherever we're at. You can search me on Twitter or GitHub. There's my email. Go nuts if you want to talk. Grab a beer. You pay, of course. All right. Just a quick show of hands. Who in here has had like any previous experience with serverless? Awesome. The rest of you might be wondering, like, so serverless, what the hell is that? And in the world we live in, especially in the software engineering world, it's quite common to get in a situation where like there's a whole new trend coming in and you're still trying to grasp what's new, and you get into this snowball effect. So a couple months ago, there were like containers popping by, and now we have this whole like serverless flow coming in. What the hell is that? Don't get thrown away by the hype. My goal here would be like to demystify what serverless actually is. So thanks to Wikipedia, we can get an accurate description of what serverless is. So basically, serverless, or function as a service, it's a cloud computing execution model where the cloud provider fully manages and your requests are billed per usage and not like by a virtual machine you have running or so. Don't get thrown away. Let's keep on moving. Let's break this up a bit and start by looking at, so function as a service, what the hell does this mean? I think everyone here might be familiar with the term function, even like the mathematical entity that is a function. Basically, it's quite simple. You have like inputs, you have outputs, and you have something happening in the middle. The cloud provider fully manages it. This is actually like what serverless is all about, if you think about it. The keyword, like the word serverless, doesn't mean that you don't have an actual server running your code. It means that you just don't have to worry where it's running. You just deploy code and stuff happens. So this is the key factor in what the whole serverless manifesto is. And like for me, this is probably the most important perk that serverless gives you. Your requests are billed based on what you actually use and not on a virtual machine usage, or like if you have a bare metal server running, you'll be charged by that bare metal server running. Here you actually pay only for what you use. You get like cool features like auto-scaling out of the box, so you don't need to worry if like by 6 p.m. you get like this whole traffic flow through your website and like through the rest of the day you get nothing. Serverless will tackle these issues for you without you having to worry about anything. There's also like multiple providers that do this for you. I've been talking about like cloud providers, but you have AWS Lambda. You have Microsoft Azure Functions, you have Google Cloud Functions, and you have more. So what is this in action, actually? So basically, you have a function that gets some triggers and does some actions. Quite simple, right? Actually, this paradigm shift obliges you to obey a certain set of rules. Your functions must be stateless. What does this mean? You don't get state shared between each function that runs. You can share it through a different service. For example, you have a database you have a set of functions running that go to that database. That's okay. But you can assume that if you run a function once and you have like a certain in-process memory usage, you won't get that same memory access in the next function that you'll run. If you follow something like the 12-factor app manifesto, this is quite easy to do if you're trying to break an app to do this. Also, you can't like run for a long period of time, else your cloud provider will probably like break up your function and you'll get an error, of course. There's ways for you to monitor this. We'll talk about that later. So let's go through a quick example. I'm actually using here Microsoft Azure Functions. They're quite nice. I was surprised, actually, because like out of the box, you can just try it out. You don't even need an Azure account. You just go ahead, and you get this nice UI where you can test some stuff, which is cool. And I'm not actually being paid to say this, so.
Yay.
Yes. I'm not going to show that here, actually. I have an example further down the road, which is more complex. But that's something that is valid. You can actually do that. In fact, you can do like basically anything with functions. You can chain them up. I'm going to show some architectural like drawings of what you can do. Some examples, of course.
Yeah,
of course. So what does this do? So basically, I had already previously created a function, which is HTTP triggered. You get basically a bootstrapped function that you can use. So we've been talking about functions, and that's actually what it is in JavaScript. You have a single function that is run every time you run a function in either of the cloud provider services I was talking about. So I have this example here. Let's try to run it. I think you can see, okay. You get some logs around here that show you the function actually being run. Or you can like just pop up the URL and try it yourself. So if you see in here, you receive two parameters in the function. One is the context that gives you actual context into the runtime that is running your function. This is useful for a whole set of stuff. For example, I don't know if this happens in Azure, but I was speaking previously about the time you still have in order to run your function. In AWS Lambda, you actually get access to the time you have remaining to run your function in the context. Probably the same happens in here. But you get access to a whole set of stuff, like to actually terminate your function and so on. The req is actually just a request. And I'm receiving a query parameter, which is basically a name. And I'm outputting that into awesome hello. So let's try it out. Whoa. Awesome. You can like go ahead and go nuts and try something even more awesome, which is whoa. Okay, this is not much. I feel you. If you're trying serverless for the first time, I really recommend you to use this because it has got a nice UI and you can go ahead and try it out. You don't even have to have an account. But like in action, this doesn't give you much actually, right? Yeah, you have like some query parameter, you do an HTTP request, and you get an output. Meh. How does this fit in a real world scenario? Imagine you have like your three-tier application. Sorry. You have your client app, you have your server, you have our data. Where does all this serverless mumbo jumbo fit in? Actually, it's not that hard to think about it, but it fits where your server should be. So all your business logic is now handled by functions or lambdas running in your cloud provider. This is like just an architectural example, but actually functions allow you to do much more than this. Like they're quite nice for dealing with data hooks, for example. Imagine you're trying to have like some kind of webhook, some GitHub webhook. If you wanted to do some kind of service that would use like some GitHub push data, you would have like to build a server, like actually provide the URL to the GitHub service and then test it out. Like lambdas are straightforward. You can like build a lambda or a function straight away, just like put it HTTP triggered, share that URL with the GitHub data hook, and there you have it. You're fit to run anything. You can then integrate with any service usually that the cloud provider gives you. You can have some kind of queue, like for example in AWS you can use like an HKS queue. You have like a lambda listening to data hooks, popping up data to be processed in the queue, and then you have like another lambda or function in the end, like doing some processing and like, I don't know, maybe putting that data in some kind of data server or something like that. So let's try something different. I'm going to use an awesome open source framework, which is called, not this one, which is called Serverless Framework. Yep. Because it gives you like out of the box set of a CLI that you can use to deploy, run, test your Lambda functions. It gives you integration with services in your cloud providers. So let's show off a bit of this. What have I done? So I was giving you like the example with the GitHub data hooks, and that's exactly what I've done. I have this webhook over here. Grab to a repo, and it's basically sending me push events to a Lambda function I have set up in AWS. This is example is going to use AWS services. So what have I actually done? So the way you configure a serverless service is using a simple YAML file, which is quite nice, because this YAML file will later be converted to a CloudFormation configuration that will basically spin up your whole infrastructure like this. So it's nothing straightforward. In AWS, you can only run Node.js 10 or 0.10 or 4. In Azure, you can run. Sorry. No longer supported? Okay, thank you. They support 6.5 now? Okay, awesome, I didn't know about that, thank you very much. Okay, you can actually run 6.5 now. I didn't know about that, thank you. This is quite straightforward. So, first I've set up the service. I have a function here, which is basically just a builder, which with the path builder, sorry, and it receives a meta post. Okay, cool. What is this over here? So I'm receiving these push events from GitHub, and I'm just basically building a fancy HTML page, which gives me like a push report of what I've done, and pushing that HTML to an S3 bucket. Because of that, I need to set some AM rules in order for me to do that. So the actual lambda is this, okay? Not much. So I received the event from GitHub. I parsed its body. I filter its outputs, I build it, and then upload it to S3. So what does the builder actually do? The builder, after the filtering of the input from GitHub, what the builder does is basically it has some React components, because everything is fancier with React, right? It has some React components. It just renders them to static markup and inlines them in this handlebars template. Okay. Why not like try it out? Can anyone see this? Does everyone see this? It's cool. Okay. This is actually the repo I'm using. So let's try like commit allow empty, I don't know, ping 5. And maybe some ping 6. And let's push it out. Okay, cool. Okay, you can see it was actually triggered. And if everything went fine, we are able to see the output that I was speaking of. Sorry. Okay, cool. There's my pretty face. And there's the list of commits that I've done. Yeah, nothing straightforward, right? But this is actually quite cool. If you think about it, you basically have like a push report service on the fly that you can do anything you want with it. You're not actually paying that much. I mean, you have like a Lambda running every time you receive a push commit hook. You get like out of the box static server providing you using S3, for example, or something like that. Okay, cool. But what about like actually using the serverless framework and its CLI? There are some like serverless out of the box gives you some nice perks. So, for example, I have this npm script set up, which basically will invoke this command. Serverless actually allows you to run your Lambda function and test it locally without even using the cloud provider services. It basically like gives you some output and it tests your Lambda straight away. It's nice. And then what about deployment? Well, you can deploy straight. You can deploy easily . Let's try it out. So I've just how can I deploy this? So serverless deploy will take care of this for you. I don't have actually the service CLI installed. I only have it in the framework. So if you check it out, this is basically what it will do, run serverless deploy. So let's try it out. This will take some time. So while we're at it, I'm going to go ahead and explain you some stuff that actually happens when you're using these services. Keep in mind that usually this is slower than usual. The first requests are slower than usual. Why? So basically, keep in mind that your code is running somewhere. So you have like some service, like either that be like a container or JVM or something like that, that's actually coming up live and like actually being prepared to receive requests and run your code. Because of that, you have like this slow, you have this small window frame when your Lambda or your function isn't warm enough, your education isn't warm enough, and your service is still being spun up. So your first couple requests might be a couple slow, but then a bit later, everything will be fine. Then you'll have like a period of 10 minutes, 15 minutes, which if you keep using, you'll be able to use these cached benefits of having a Lambda cached. Some, like, imagine you have like inconsistent traffic going on, and you want to make sure that your Lambda is always warm. The cache on your Lambda is always warm. What can you do? So, like, there are some hacks around it, which is basically just ping your Lambda like 10 minutes, just ping your service, for example. That way you make sure that you don't have like any performance downgrade. Let's check this out. All right, it's out there. So now that we've deployed our new service, let's try commit something. Cool. So your changes are like right there on the fly. Take that continuous integration. So yeah. Moving on. So is this it? No. There's a lot more. As I was telling you before, you can like do a ton of things with lambdas and functions. You can like pipe them. You can like integrate with the series of service your cloud provider gives you. One advice I usually give is don't get yourself sucked into the rabbit hole that is like to use all these services, because then you're like probably in a tight coupling with your cloud provider. If that's what you're looking for, go ahead. If that's not what you're looking for, then I just advise you to be cautious. That's all. There's also like some cool open source projects out there. I've already shown you the serverless framework. It can do a lot for you. I didn't show like a third of its actual features and what it actually supports. There's also Dawson CLI. I haven't tried it, but it's kind of like serverless framework, but focused only on AWS. Serverless framework actually allows you to do all that stuff to different cloud providers, which is nice. And like, for example, you have this Serverless Express open source project here, which allows you, if you have like an Express Node.js app, it quickly allows you to start using that same Express paradigm, start using serverless right away. You have the same for Azure. I searched a bit. I didn't put the link in here. I'm sorry about it. But yeah. So yeah, thanks. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah, that's what. Yeah. Outside of Lambda, you have to move components. You don't have the API interface. MID is Microsoft, something similar. But my question is, how do you tackle a DOS tech?
So.
Because you're going to pay for the request, right?
Yep.
And then suddenly you get like the ceiling of the request.
Yeah. I've actually never dealt with that scenario before, but as you're hosting everything in a cloud provider, and as you were saying, like for example, if you're using Amazon API Gateway, you can probably you should probably run this through some services that give you some kind of guarantee that you're not going to suffer from a DOS attack, for example. I've never been into that position before myself. I honestly can like give you good advice on it, but that's something to look out for, definitely. Yep.
Also, for this case of the DOS attack or something like that, wouldn't it be more advisable to have like a reverse proxy on your side, like a server on your side that does not post the functions that your client might have, does the initial loopback? And in that reverse proxy, you just orchestrate all the Lambda functions you need to call, and when the request reaches that point, well, it's authorized, so probably.
You can do it like that. I've actually like the what I've done before was actually like that. I had already a server running, and I had to deal with like some specific set of services. And I thought like, why not use serverless for this? Because it made sense. I ended up doing exactly that. Although like I think it defeats a bit the point of serverless probably. Because you have like a server and then you have serverless, like a server and then you have like functions behind it. It sounds like an hack, probably, or at least. So that's basically what I believe the cloud, depending on the cloud provider you're using, I believe like they have some kind of mechanism or some kind of service that allows you to fine-grain the access you get to your API gateway, at least. I think so. I believe. I want to believe in it.
Let me add on that. Probably using the reverse proxy, I don't agree with when you say that it's defeating the purpose of using the.
It depends on what you're doing, of what you're doing. As I was saying, I used it like that, but it made sense for that particular service.
When you don't need to have such an heavy infrastructure behind just to run.
It basically allows you to get something up and running quite fast. But not only that, it gives you a lot more. All right, any more questions? Yeah. Like you can get like time triggered, for example. You can have them like integrated with different services inside your cloud provider. For example, in Azure, I read about it this week, basically, and you can integrate it with like a whole set of services that. Sorry?
Everything they have.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah.
You think it's possible to use it with some standard system like RFMQ or RFMQ or so on?
Like, for example, you can do that in AWS, you have SQS. The thing is, like, SQS is a bit stupid because it doesn't allow you, like, to trigger, you have to poll it with the Lambda. So, like, imagine this scenario I was showing up here, like, So basically, like this is quite nice. If this is able to trigger this, what happens in AWS is that if you have like this is an SQS, basically it's a queue of data. You process it, you insert it, and in here it would be awesome if this would trigger this Lambda. The thing is that that doesn't actually happen. You have, like this Lambda has to poll the service. Like, have you something? Do you have something? But it's still quite useful. It's still a nice thing to have.
Do you think that the cloud providers are thinking about doing it really asynchronous with a connect, like having a probably already have to have this
this layer.
This layer?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. Like again, this will really depend on the cloud on the cloud provider you have and like the architecture you're running and what you're planning on supporting. Like I don't even know a third of the services AWS has. Like even the names, I mean, they don't even make sense. Azure is the same thing basically. I didn't use that that much of cloud Google Cloud still, but I imagine it's basically the same. In terms of services, like what this allows you to is basically you can like you can spin up something really quick without that much of an hassle, and the integration with the other services like right there. You don't have to do that much, like.
Yeah, but just like HTTP, everyone started using, but then it's like a huge protocol. You get a lot of things that you don't need. You just send a message. That's also one of the reasons that it's kind of zero MQ and very MQ, and that's a lot of other stuff. Faster,
yeah, yeah. You don't actually kill it. That depends, of course, on like the limitations you have. If you're looking like for full-fledged performance, and like probably in the scenario you're talking about, you're probably like you want to fine-tune all your services, like. And what I'm going to say is like really, if you're looking for fine-tuning, don't go this way. Because this won't give you fine-tuning. This is basically like out of the box, no setup, it runs. It allows you, of course it allows you for some fine-tuning, but you can't like you can't do profiling in the Node.js. You can't do like you can't actually like tweak your Node.js VM to V8 to do something you need, or you like you lose the fine grainness of what you get from not using a server a service like this. It's discussable. I believe it. I believe in it. That if you're looking for some like if you want to be do some fine grain configuration over the services you have running, probably you shouldn't go this way. Any more questions? All right. Looks like we're all heading out for early lunch. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed it.